3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD, a marketing services firm that delivers the future to healthcare's leading brands. This show is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, all focused around the future of healthcare, marketing, and communications. I'm Stephanie Ruehl, EVP of Engagement here at BPD, and I'm joined by Chris Bevelo, Chief Transformation Officer. Hello and happy Friday, Chris.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Friday is right.
So we've got a lot to cover today. We have a few headlines of some new news happening, both in healthcare and marketing. On the healthcare side, we'll talk about how Walgreens has finally gone private after a lot of news and rumors that they would. But more interestingly, they've separated into 5 disparate brands and groups. Our second headline on the marketing side is that brands are beginning to test out CMOs and chief marketing officers before hiring. So that fractional CMO is really becoming an increasing trend. And then we're going to get into our main topic. We're going to go more deeply into a blog post that we have referenced several times, but I can't wait to get into it. Chris, you are the mastermind behind this blog post, which digs into a really important trend that we're seeing. We're calling the blog post, "You're Full, But Are You Growing?" And it digs into the fact that so many health systems are at capacity, but maybe there's things that haven't been considered. So we'll get into that. So just a few quick notes before we get into those items. First of all, quick reminder, we've said it a few times. We'll say it some more because we're so excited. But the Joe Public Retreat is coming up in February of 2026. And you can register now. We'll drop that in the show notes so you can click the link. As a reminder, the 2026 theme is the AI dream. And we're going to be there when the future is written on the lovely, beautiful South Beach in Miami. Second of all, catch us at the Illinois Society for Healthcare Marketing and Public Relations. They have a fall conference happening very soon on September 18th. And our very own Kate Caverno, VP of Communications at BPD, will be hosting this this report out. So we're really, really excited for that. A few more details around that is that we're really speaking to this report that we've published lately called Tomorrow's Too Late, Time is Running Out for Health Systems to Validate Their Value. And so for more information, you can click the link in our show notes. And then last, if you can't get enough of the No Normal Show, you can always subscribe to the No Normal Rewind. It recaps all the things we get into, gives you the sources for what we're talking about, share some extra insights, and you can follow along. And then last, I'll pass it to you, Chris, for a note you had around an episode that we shared recently.
Yes, we have to make a correction. And this is embarrassing because we had it 2 episodes ago. We talked about ROI, and we made great pains to talk about how easy it is to confuse language around ROI and the definition of ROI. And then I went ahead and misstated something. And so I'm sure most people didn't even catch it and wouldn't even know, but it makes me feel awful. So in the episode, I talked about why people should use contribution margin instead of net patient revenue, net patient revenue being the revenue that's generated from a marketing effort. Contribution margin is the money that's left over after expenses. And my error was saying it's the money left over after the marketing expenses for that investment or for that initiative. Actually, contribution margin is the money left over after the direct costs for the business you brought in. So if you brought in $1 million in net patient revenue in orthopedic surgery through a campaign, contribution margin is what's left over after you take out the expenses for actually delivering those surgeries. So that might be physician fees, it might be facility fees, that might be cotton swabs, who knows? The money that's left over is contribution margin. Then you take into consideration the marketing expenses using the formula that we talked about. So that is the appropriate definition of contribution margin. And I just had to get that off my chest. So we can move on now. Everybody can go back to their regularly scheduled ROI calculations.
Yeah, that sounds like the formulas are keeping you up at night, Chris. You're sitting there thinking through financial formulas. There's an Excel sheet in your brain that's just happening.
Well, it just shows why we should be listening. Like, I don't really listen to our show on some kind of like cadence because we're recording it unless I'm not on it. So had I listened to it right after it came out, I would have caught it. We could have addressed it last week, but nope, there it is. Okay. We shall move on.
Yeah. Well, I will say we are going to probably get, you know, touch on a little bit of the finance details in our main topic today, because we are going to get into the fact that how can CMOs think about financial impact? So it's kind of a good little tie in here. Before we get into all the things, Chris, you were sharing, you know, it's been a minute since we've, I think, shared what we're watching, what we're seeing. We used to talk a lot about the White Lotus, you know, of the world. I think you've been on the documentary train recently, right? What have you been tuned into?
Well, I mean, I was at the vanguard of viewership for perhaps the most popular talked about documentary since, oh gosh, what was the name of the Tiger or something? What was the name of that pandemic? Tiger King?
I don't remember. Yes,
Tiger King,
I think.
And this doesn't sound right
from my memory.
I don't know what it was, but anyway, the documentary is called Unknown Number: The High School Catfishing Story. I guess, like, if I say what it's about, I will be spoiling it. All I will say is, one, you have to watch it because it's just mind blowing in a lot of ways, and then two, what's also interesting about it is not just the story, but you start to think about how they created this documentary, given the story. And that opens up a whole other room of doors that you're like, well, how did that work? And why is that happening? And the way they filmed the documentary is good because it's kind of like a mystery and you don't know the answer till the end. And the way they've shot the documentary makes that more of a surprise. But it is insane. It's insane. And it's not just like an individual case of insanity, but as you read more about it, you learn like, oh, this is going to be happening more and more, which is uber scary. It already is happening.
Oh, no.
The thing that is behind it. And now there's a new form of it. Again, I guess I can share the new form of it. If you know what Munchausen syndrome is, Stephanie. Right.
Yes.
So
yes,
this is kind of Munchausen by proxy, which means, you know, well, I'm giving away. I can't say what it is.
I know you are. You Munchausen. Are. I did watch it, by the way. So you are
okay.
Giving things away.
I'm sorry, but it's basically cyber Munchausen, which means it's a new form that's happening using social media and digital. So anyway, I may have just teased it accidentally, but you could have. Yeah, I may not have given it away. You don't necessarily know the answer because I said that. It might give you a hint, but that's it. Anyway, what about you?
Well, I did watch that after you mentioned it. I did, and it was intense. It was really, really
Did you know
intense.
What was coming?
It was kind of hard. I knew. Well, you said there was going to be some kind of twist, so I was sitting there. And I watched it with my partner, and we were both trying to guess, and we had really fun time guessing, you know, what was going to happen. So that part of it, the mystery part, was really exciting. But the last half was just really tough.
I will say, like, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes in, there was like a scene where people were introduced, and I immediately said out loud, oh, no. Because I just was like, okay, what's the worst possible outcome? I was like, oh no. And my wife's like, I don't want to hear it. She hates it when I try to be guessing what's going on. She's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear your opinion. Like, she paused the documentary. So I didn't really actually, it just hit my head like, ooh, what if it's that? And then later it was still a shock, especially given the story. Gruesome. Anyway. So you watched that.
Well,
so everybody should watch that. Is that a recommendation?
I think so. Yeah. Just be prepared going in, like, to be a little, it's just a little intense, but
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's go into our headlines. That was fun. I love when we talk about shows. I just think it's fun. It's a nice little deviation from some of the healthcare intensity.
Unfortunately, that one is not a deviation from either negativity or health. But it was still entertaining.
Or AI or tech or culture. But anyway, All right. So let's shift into our headlines here. So we really wanted to just reference that, you know, some of the Walgreens saga has begun to play out. We've been talking about Walgreens for quite some time now. We've been watching this. We've been monitoring this because, of course, Walgreens had promised that they were moving into the full continuum of care. Retail health was going into full-scale healthcare. And so we've been watching this. And the new news is that they are finally officially going private and specifically splitting into five companies. So those five standalone companies are Walgreens, the Boots Group, Shields
Boogie.
Health Solutions, Yeah, I was waiting for the song, Chris.
You didn't even pause
Boots
for
group.
Me to sing. The Boots Group. Boogie.
There you go.
Sorry. Keep going. I can't help it.
CareCentrics and VillageMD. So that's the list. These are now five standalone, completely discrete companies and brands. And I'll just pause there, Chris. I think we both have different and interesting takes on this. But what was your reaction seeing this play out?
Yeah, I think it's more but it's more evidence that the funnel wars really collapsed in on itself. And it was of the predictions we made in the Joe Public 2030 book. While there's still a chance that the funnel wars play out in some way, where it started and where, you know, like what's that famous meme, like where it began and where it's at today. This is just more evidence of that, I think. But what I don't know, and I don't know that anybody, unless you're on the inside, knows, is this a sign that you really can't pull together assets like this with a vision and disrupt healthcare? Or is this a sign that Walgreens couldn't pull together the assets and disrupt healthcare, right? Because in theory, the things they were trying to do made theoretical sense, given Walgreens' footprint and the different assets that they acquired and built. So theoretically, it made sense, but it did not work for one reason or the other. And so now they're just kind of like, okay, we're just gonna keep these things separate, and not really try to build on the synergies between them, at least as far as you can see. So it's super interesting, and I also wonder how much of this is just makes it easier for them to sell off parts moving forward, because now there are distinct companies that you could put up for sale. As before, it was just a kind of an integrated mess. So that's my take.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. VillageMD, for one, I think, you know, that's like an Amazon or, you know, or an Apple. I mean, back to our joke, the original kind of discussions that we were having, thinking about the top of the acuity funnel and where that would go. I'm still a believer in the funnel wars. I continue to stand strong on that. I think that we just see, you know, the volatility of it, the up, down, back and forth. It's not an easy thing for retail or consumer brands or tech brands to enter healthcare, especially at the top of the acuity funnel. And there's been a lot of failures, but I think that the vision still stands and many still believe in the vision, and they're going to keep trying. So I would say for health systems and legacy providers, don't stop pushing forward on your side. However, it is really good to learn from all of these, you know, ups and downs and back and forths.
Yes. Yes, it is. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll keep watching.
We will. Okay. On to number two. So we saw this really interesting article that came out of Ad Age around how more brands across industries are testing out chief marketing officers before hiring them full time. Sort of this idea of dating before you hire, consulting, fractional, interim CMOs. Some examples are JCPenney is a big one, Airbnb, and others. So I think, you know, what's interesting about this to me is this has been a trend for a little while. This idea of fractional leaders really popped up after the pandemic. But seeing these high profile brands really hiring consulting or interim chief marketing officers, and not even just before hiring them, right? But just even as a long-term play, plays into a lot of what you've been really highlighting, Chris, in terms of Rome is burning and what the future of the CMO looks like.
Yeah, it's a very interesting twist on kind of the future of the CMO. And I actually think it's a positive right? So in some ways you might go like, wow, if we're moving from everybody's seeking a full-time gig to, well, no, you might have to go through this dating kind of thing, or you might have more organizations that aren't looking for a full-time, at least immediately. They're going to bring you in fractionally, part-time, test you out, whatever. But I actually think that that's not a bad strategy. It's a good strategy for everybody involved. For one, I just think it's, you know, fit in an organization is super important, and that's impossible to determine before you take a job. You can do all the vetting you want, but once you get in there, the reality is the reality. And so, you know, making sure the organization is comfortable with the individual and vice versa makes sense. I also think there are different people are good at different things. So if you're trying to transform a marketing function in some way, the person you bring in for 6 months or a year might be fantastic at that, but may not be the best manager long-term of the marketing function. So I think in general, this is pretty positive. So hopefully that's how people who are out there, you know, in CMO roles feel that too. But it would be interesting to talk to a few, because we know that there's been some of this in the health system space as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there absolutely has been. And I think it's just one of many trends that's reshaping the future of marketing leadership. So with that, why don't we get into our main topic today? I'm really excited to dig into this because, like I mentioned, we've teased it a couple times, but there's a new blog post that we have published called "You're Full, But Are You Growing?" And it really is a continuation of the Future of the CMO report, where we've outlined these 5 opportunities for CMOs to pursue. And the 5th one is maybe the most obvious, you'd think, but one of the hardest, which is the fact that money still matters and CMOs need to continue to pursue financial impact. So of course, financial growth is a priority, right? Of course, ROI is a priority, but it's really difficult to achieve. It's really difficult to prove. It's really difficult for all kinds of reasons. And one of the reasons is the fact that health systems are largely, quote, at capacity, right? They're full. There may be a backlog of patients, many service lines, especially think cardio, think ortho, might be, you know, have very long wait lists. Chris, you've shared your experience trying to get an appointment for a screening that took 6-9 plus months. So we have this historic demand that's really piled up among baby boomers, this pig through the snake type of metaphor. And so demand is really outpacing supply. So that's kind of the landscape. I'm going to pause and see, Chris, I know you've been really touting this. You've been watching this. You've been seeing this landscape play out. Is there anything? I just hit that very high level before we get into what it means to be full and at capacity. But anything landscape wise you want to add that's driving this?
Yeah, I think you hit it all well. And when we first started looking at this, it really was almost like, is it possible this dynamic might hit us? It was a confluence of like conversations with the CMO, some of the feedback we're getting from clients are like, oh, we're not really, we're kind of shutting down any, like we're shutting down our primary care panels because we can't handle anymore, or we're going to stop promoting this one service line because it's full. And then my own personal experience, right? Pulling all this together, that was like 2 years ago. And now we actually hear from CMOs and from their leaders. CMOs aren't really saying this. They're reflecting it back from what they're hearing from their leaders that, hey, we're full. We have heard as a marketing leader, I'm no longer being prioritized with new patient acquisition. I'm focusing on, say, the experience. My boss is telling me, why do we need to increase marketing budget? We're full. So we're hearing it, and we believe that a number of CMO roles that have been eliminated, if not in some part, a large part, because of this dynamic, which is, if we're full, why do we need marketing? Why do we need to invest in marketing? Or certainly, why do we need to invest in the level that we have, which may include the roles at the most senior level? So it is true. And I will, I'm just here to say, like, we did not manifest that. This is not something we want or agree with. Don't shoot the messenger. But I think, like, we're hearing more and more of it, which leads us to kind of our take on, okay, you're full, but.
Yeah. Yes. So let's get into that. So what does it actually mean to be full? And often, you're right, you know, it is really just a blanket statement. It's like either blanket across an entire service line or blanket across the organization to be like, oh, this biggest challenge that we have is access. The biggest challenge we have is patients have long wait times. We don't have capacity that we need. As opposed to, I think what I really liked about your perspective here, Chris, was digging into the nuances of it. So I'll just kind of maybe turn it back to you and say, unpack a little bit. What does it mean to be full? And what are the various nuances and different ways to think about that?
Yeah. And I think when we get this feedback, it's just as you described it. And again, this is coming through our marketing, you know, connections. And it is basically like we're full. The hospital is full. Inpatient usually is what we mean by full. It might be primary care is full. It might be a lot of specialty care, right? Like, oh, it takes forever to get to see a dermatologist. Like, good luck to get in and see a dermatologist or a neurologist or something like that. But it's kind of applied to this, we're full. And, you know, I can't guarantee this is true, but I'd bet a lot of money on it. In every single one of these situations, the odds are very good that you may be full net-net. So if you look across all the different service lines or all the different ways you deliver care, and you just kind of like total it all up, you may have capacity issues. Certainly the capacity and access is a huge issue. But that is the net, right? So there's probably very few systems that are full across the board equally. By equally, I mean to the degree they shouldn't be marketing or seeking new patients, right? So even if you could have an overall, I'm just making this up, I don't think anybody ever measures it, but let's say that like the average wait time across all of your services as a health system is 3 weeks, all right? Well, in some cases, it might be 3 months, and in other cases, it might be same day, we got openings, right? Because we're talking about the net, we're talking about the overall average. What that means then is it is very likely that there are whole service lines or services or subspecialties or physicians that are not full. We'll just start with that because it even goes further than that, right? But just thinking about, do we need new patients or not? Odds are good you still need new patients in some areas. So that's the first kind of pushback on the we're full, because if you just accept that, you're not necessarily maximizing your ability to grow. And that's the point of the blog post. That's the first.
And I think that's, I think that's really, really critical of, and in many ways it's okay, how do you then dig into the data around the various service lines, around, you know, services inside the service lines? And also, what does the patient even need in that moment? I think is an interesting question, because maybe what they're trying to get into, maybe something else could serve them that has availability, that could be a workaround, or perhaps there's other levers to pull from a marketing standpoint to say, okay, this service or this service line is full, so now let's drive people over here. I just have to sidebar. You mentioned dermatology, and I literally just 3 weeks ago tried to get into dermatology, and I mean, it was a 4-month wait, and by that point, it's like, what are we even doing? So I pivoted and found a telehealth totally outside of my regular, you know, provider I would go to, and just went the telehealth route. And this is a little bit, you know, more on the operational side, but I was just at a group of strategy and operators and marketing leaders talking about the importance of telehealth and partnerships, and thinking, okay, if our physicians can't see someone, how do we have the right things in place to ensure that we get their problem solved through other means? Whether it's partnerships or whether it's telehealth or whether it's locum tenens, right? So I think it's my biggest point out of that is having marketing connected to operating and service line leaders to make those decisions that you're talking about.
Yeah, 100%. And I, you know, without getting too gruesome, this is only going to get worse, in a sense that it's just going to be, capacity issues are going to become more of a challenge given some of the financial things that are coming. And so if it's a kind of a point of view or a sacred cow that we're full, therefore we shouldn't invest in marketing. One, you're probably not full everywhere, but you're going to get more of this. I think you're going to get more of these issues going forward. the snake through the pig. So the pig's going to get bigger and in the ways that are probably not helpful to you. And the snake is always going to be a challenge, which is the labor that you have. So,
right, right. Because everybody knows we need more physicians. That's like, duh. But the solution of how to get more physicians or how to create more access, it's not easy. It's so it's, I think the answer is not go hire more physicians, right? The answer is not open up access. The answer is all the things we're about to talk about. So I think you just covered kind of the first pig point. Maybe let's move into our, in your mind, what is the second area of this?
Yeah. So the second one is, and again, it kind of speaks to the issues we just mentioned, which are going to cause challenges in many ways, but from a marketing and a growth standpoint, it's never been easy to drive revenue, but it's just going to become more important that you're, what's the couch cushion coin metaphor? I don't know what it is. Like you're turning over every couch cushion, right? Because you're going to need every coin. And so the second reason why you shouldn't just kind of stand pat when you hear we're full is related to the financial issues we see people having. And kind of this idea that you've already had to really try to make sure that you are uncovering all opportunities to grow. Now every couch cushion is fair game. You got to find every coin that you can. And what we're talking about here is you may be full, but are you full of the right patients? And what we mean by that, of course, is all patients are great. All patients should be treated equally. You should be delivering care to all patients, accepting all patients, depending on your mission, all that good stuff. We're talking about payer mix. And that can be a very sensitive thing, but like it or not, the reality of our healthcare system in the United States depends on cost shifting. And what I mean by that is the patients who have a better reimbursement rate help fund care for the patients that don't. We may not like that. We may not think that's fair. There's all kinds of arguments against it. We're not here to have those arguments. It's the reality. And so if you're going to really survive, let alone thrive and grow, you've got to make sure that with your marketing dollars, you are maximizing the right patients from a payer mix standpoint that you're bringing in. And so when we hear we're full, that just feels like, okay, we can just wash our hands of needing to make sure that we have more commercially insured patients that we're attracting in, because those are the ones that can help you underwrite all of the care that you deliver. So that's the second one.
Yes. Yes. And the thing I'll add there is just the importance of having the right data to really highlight that, having the claims data, having it, connected to on the back end of who actually ended up coming in. And so that's the really exciting and nerdy marketing attribution discussion, but also the targeting discussion of how are we ensuring that we are targeting the right folks, finding them where they are. It's not just, you're not doing that through meta targeting, right? You're doing that through your own data or through the right data to ensure that you're getting that. And then being able to merchandise that back, I think, is so key. And one thing I loved about the Future of the CMO report is just the importance of marketing showing up as that business leader, of that finance partner, of sitting down with finance and saying, let's dig into this. Let's look at this claims data. Let's look at what we've driven. Does that align with what you're seeing on your side? And how do we really connect the two? So
yeah,
super exciting, but not traditionally how marketing, outside of healthcare works.
Yeah. We talk with clients and systems all the time, because we have a solution called precision marketing, which uses an incredibly powerful data set to find the right patients. And it's always interesting to me, potential patients, I should say. So in addition to whatever you're doing with your CRM, we're able to go out to market and say, hey, we can find you 20,000 cardiology patients at a average contribution rate of X. We're going to pull those in. What's interesting to me is sometimes people, when we talk to them about it, say like, well, can you target by payer mix? And we're like, I mean, does the I'm coming up with a really bad metaphor. Does the Pope wear a funny hat? There, that's a better one. Because why would you even do that? Why would you even do that if you can't target the right payer mix, right? Yeah, 100%. That's the first thing we're looking for. It's propensity for a specific kind of disease or care need. And then it's right, the right commercial mix. Not that we don't want to serve people who are on Medicare or Medicaid or self-pay. 100% we do. But a lot of those folks are going to come when they need to. We need to go out and make sure we're pulling in those folks with the right payer mix to, again, to fund all of this, for right or for wrong, right? Don't shoot the messenger on how the U.S. health system is built. It's just one more reason that is kind of funky and weird, but it's the reality. So when you're going out there, you've got to make sure you're targeting those people.
Yeah. Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
Right.
Okay. What's number three, Chris? So you've teed up number one, number two, which is payer mix. What's number three?
The third one is, and we see some clients really taking action on this, and it's one of the more exciting ones to me, which is we're full. So let's take your example of the dermatology appointment, right? And it's 4 months to get in. And at what point, what are we talking about? I had a similar experience last month this was July, and I had to do a GI checkup. And as soon as I could see my GI, it was February. And I'm like, boy, can I see a nurse practitioner or something? So just imagine how much that happens where patients just don't make the appointment. Maybe you didn't make your dermatology appointment, Stephanie, because it was too far out. Maybe you did make it, but maybe you found an alternative in the meantime and you switched. Maybe you got to what's 4 months from now. That's December. Is that December? Oh my God.
Yeah. Yes.
To your appointment. And you're like, oh shoot, I got to travel. I got to miss my appointment. So I'm going to have to schedule another 4 months out. What is the system doing with all those holes that are being created by we're full, meaning our panel is full, our appointments are full, but we all know that those don't, I don't know what the attrition rate is, but it's got to be 10%, 20% of appointments that go by the wayside for whatever reason. What are you doing in the very, very short term to be able to refill those? Because you may look full, but if you've got a 10 to 20% attrition rate, that means you've got 10 to 20% of your fullness that goes. And once it goes, it's gone. You can't go back in time and fill that appointment. So what can you do to make sure you're doing everything to fill in those gaps as they appear? That's very difficult, but there are certainly steps that you can take.
Yeah, this is where I get really excited, because this is where I think actually marketing can play a huge role. And marketing should play a huge role in the first two that we talked to as well, right? But for this one, so let's just take that example. So in that example, I pivoted outside of my provider and found a telehealth solution through my health plan. But I also leaned into ChatGPT. I went to Google, you know, YouTube, like all of that. Imagine if my provider had automatically seen on the website, because I'm logged in, that I was looking for an appointment and I didn't complete it. And immediately, automatically, an email comes to me that says, hey, we noticed you might have need something. Is there somehow we can help you? And it's an automated response. Imagine then if they had some kind of automated, actually sophisticated, good chatbot that could then help me. Imagine then if it came to some kind of nurse navigator who could then have a discussion. That's one example of something you can do. Let's just make sure this person doesn't have skin cancer. You know what I mean? Let's actually see if they really need something. How can you use patient communications? How can you use your website, your digital experience, your email, all of that? That's one example. I'm sure there are 100 more we can come up with. And Chris, I think this is where you and I get really excited about, you know, rethinking things, maybe than how they traditionally are.
Yes. And I think like my provider, and I'm sure a lot of systems do this, has a waiting list, for example. So let's say they had offered you a waiting list and they're like, hey, sorry, the first appointment that we can see that's open is in 4 months, but we'll put you on a waiting list and we'll automatically slot you in the first one, let you know when it is. And if you can't make it, then we'll let you know if there's any others available, or you just go back in your same position on the waiting list. That can all be automated. And so I don't know how much of it is on the back end. I know that when I call to make an appointment and I'm like, gee whiz, it takes till February, they'll say like, well, if we have a cancellation, we can call you back. The trick with that is normally they're like, hey, Chris, it's your GI doctor. We had a cancellation today at 2:00. Can you make it? And you're like, most of us are not in a position to just drop everything. I might not even be in town. So there needs to be, you know, maybe some people are willing to do that. Yeah, I can come, give me an hour notice. Like maybe there's some setting that you can say like, as long as you give me 2 hour notice, I would like to know, right? And I can just set that, or a day notice or something, right? So all of this to me seems to be utterly doable with data, AI, technology. But just again, this is a 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of scenario we're in. you know, all the metaphors, flip over all the couch cushions, look for all the coins, do not leave any stone unturned. I don't know, I'm running out of them. But don't just accept that we're full, because the odds are there's still work you can do to ensure that you're going to maximize your capacity and grow as much as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's exciting. It's like a little investigative journey to say, okay, we're full, but like, let's really dig in. And I love that you've outlined in this blog and just in this conversation, all the ways to go think about it. Thinking about it with your operating partners, thinking about it with your finance partners, thinking about it through the patient experience, patient journey, comms, all of that. So
I want to share one story. Ahead. Can I share one story? I think, like you said, it's an investigative journey. I think if you go on this investigative journey, you might find some, even by like going through the Amazon and be like, whoa, there's a bird that nobody's ever seen before. Without sharing any of the organization or the people involved. I can't remember if you were with me when we heard this story. I think you might have been, of a system that had automatic scheduling. So you could go online and actually put in your appointment. And they were uncovering that a lot of those appointments were falling off. So people weren't showing up or whatever. And so they went to investigate it. And they found out from listening to the communications from the schedule coordinator that the culprit wasn't the patients. The culprit was the practice that was proactively canceling patient scheduled appointments because they believed that those appointments were like 50-50. And so if I need the time, I'm going to cancel somebody who made this appointment online because the odds are higher they will probably cancel because of that. Woo, that's a bird of a different color. Yeah. When we heard that, we were just like, holy crap. So think of the things that you're going to find behind all of the wonkiness that is your capacity and solving for some of those and how that could help you open up opportunities.
Well, oh yeah. I remember that story, and it was just such a fascinating thing to find, because I don't think, you know, if there wasn't that investigation of the investigative journey, you wouldn't have found that. And you probably would have just assumed like, God, no-show rates are so high. Man, what's up with the culture these days? People aren't showing up. They're not keeping their promises. And, you know, I think no-shows as a whole, we haven't even talked about that really at large, but that's a whole separate category of ways to use behavioral science and nudging to close the no-show gap. I mean, even something as simple as a reminder message, which most systems have in place, that's like total table stakes. But what are the very, very small, minor nudges that you can do to ensure that you're closing no-show gaps? And then can you be sophisticated enough, like, dare I say, like airlines, I'm not saying you overbook your plane. No one likes that. But if you have the right data and you know what the no-show rate are, then you can really prioritize that wait list. You can, you know, you can pull all these different levers on the back end. And then imagine if you're really, you know, your CRM is that strong that you're able to communicate those kinds of personalized messages. So you could have an entire strategy just to close the no-show gap. Yeah. I get riled up. I don't know.
I think this might be, I don't want to give credit where credit isn't due, but this might be an epic innovation. But I noticed that with my own appointments, I no longer just get a confirmation or a reminder. I see the adoption of what restaurants have had to do, because they also suffer from no-shows and it's a big problem. They ask you to recommit. So, hey, you've got a reservation tomorrow night. Are you still planning on coming? Yes. Why for yes and for no? That makes you stop, right? And most of the time you're like, yeah, I'm still coming. Yes. But it does make you pause. And if you're like, oh, like now if I say yes and I cancel, now what does that mean? Like now they've really got me twice. I've signed up for this thing and I've confirmed it. So there's kind of social pressure in that. There might be financial implications to that. And it's all behavioral, right? Mostly it's a psychology thing. And it's the same thing with your doctor's appointments. So if you don't have that ability, or it's a switch you need to switch on at Epic, I don't know if that's really where it comes from. It seems like it would be, because that's the system my provider uses. That's an example of a very small thing that would help with no-shows. Like, who knows, 5%. Who knows what that would help with, but... there are plenty others, and you and I geek out on this, so maybe we save it all for a different show.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. I think it's super fun. And, you know, there's so many rabbit holes we haven't gone down. You referenced Epic, and I think absolutely there's so many things Epic has in play and is developing. And back to the point of marketing, collaborating, you know, partner with Epic and really put that, you know, journey together to say, like, what other features can we put in place along with your chief digital officer or whoever else? So anyway, we could probably go on and on about something as seemingly small as we're full. but thanks for the convo, Chris.
Yeah, that was a good time, and definitely watch Unknown Number. I would also recommend Katrina as a great three-part documentary. I mean, I think anybody that was around during that remembers how incredible it was. If you've read or seen 5 Days at Memorial, I think is the name of it. Holy crap. I mean, that's about a hospital. Was it Memorial? 5 Days at Memorial? I think so. That is like a horror novel to read. The poor people, the workers and the patients. But seeing the documentary again and seeing all of what went down, wow. Wow. Yeah.
Well, that's all I haven't seen that one. So I have to watch 5 Days at Memorial.
Have your rage squeeze ball, because you're going to be squeezing in rage multiple times. You're going to be like, no way did this happen. Sorry, I'm just being fair.
Warm and fuzzy docus.
That's not warm and fuzzy. No,
I know. Well, Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut on Netflix is my reco. It is a little warm and fuzzy. It's talking about the microbiome and all the great things that our guts do. Speaking of GI, you know, the gut is the brain of the body, actually. And I have always loved gut health
isn't
and the microbiome.
Isn't the brain the brain of the body?
The second brain. I'm sorry. The gut is the second brain. I missed a word there. A really important word. But anyway, you'll learn. It's so fascinating, and it will make you really want to eat your greens. So that's my recommendation.
Does it allow me to like judge people's health as I walk by them in the airport?
You know, I think you can already, I give you permission to do that anyway. I do that at the grocery store. I probably shouldn't say that. That's terrible. But I do that at the grocery store. I look in people's carts.
Oh my gosh. Blank blank. You know what I'm talking about there, right? Have you ever heard of that? Am I the a-hole? There's a whole thing.
Okay.
It's kind of like an AMA, but it's am I the a-hole? And then somebody describes something. And then whoever's doing it like discusses, is this person right or wrong? So that would be a perfect one. Am I the a-hole for judging people by the contents of their grocery carts? I think you would be, especially if you said something.
I think so. Oh, I would never say anything. No, I just go down a rabbit hole in my brain of thinking about the food system more so than the individual human. But anyway, it's a fascinating little, I shouldn't have said that out loud. Look at me having a vulnerability hangover.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. That was a little bit of fun at the end of our episode. So a different kind of you're full. You're full
kinds.
Of Doritos
right.
and ice cream.
You're full.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we'll leave it here. Thanks for listening. And as always, we love for everyone to listen. So give this a share if you enjoyed it. Let us know if you have any specific tactics that you like to put in play when you hear the we're full type of discussion. Give us a review if you would like to. And until next time, don't be satisfied with fullness. Don't be satisfied with the no normal. Push that no normal, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
3, 2, 1. Here we go.